A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 346. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about An Englishman's Castle. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're looking at this BBC three-part series from 1978. It's about 144 minutes in total, each episode coming in, I think, just under the 50 minutes or a shade under. And it's an alternate history story where Britain is controlled by Germany, a Germany that won World War II when Britain surrendered. And there's lots of interesting content in just these three episodes for us to get into, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And we are seeing things from the perspective of a television writer called Peter Ingram, who is wrestling with the state control and censorship and different things that are going on in society, in part with his hit TV show that he writes. The show is called An Englishman's Castle. So we have a show within a show here, and it is set in the present day of the late 1970s when this came out, but in this alternate history version of the world.
Very interesting stuff, and lots to talk about.
Yes, indeed. So Peter Ingram has a quite comfortable life, where, he's quite well-to-do, and we see that challenged by a young actor from his show, this woman who is an actor who becomes his mistress, and she reveals that, in fact, she is Jewish. And before they sleep together, she says this to warn him that it is in fact an illegal act for him to be doing that.
Yes, we get this sort of, you know, quite clear message from the actor Jill to Peter Ingram, you know, if we go to bed together, you will be committing an illegal act because I am Jewish. Again, this the show painting in some of the backstory for us. And of course, as we said last time, his son Mark, the angry young son in his sort of, guess, in his late teens or early 20s, is clashing with Ingram about politics. And we learn that he may be involved in the resistance. We talked last time about these polite but firm clashes he's having with his boss at work, Harmer, and particularly a sticking point, which is that Ingram wants to include a character in his TV series based on a friend of his that he served with during World War II, and the character has a Jewish surname, and he wants to put this in his primetime television show. And of course, Harmer, representing authority and the British Broadcasting Network, and to a certain extent the puppet government, sort of is quite firm that this cannot happen, and it suggests that the character be given a nice English name such as Robinson instead. And it's all done in a sort of chap sitting in office talking about this, but actually the stuff they're talking about is quite disturbing and troubling in a way, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. The dialogue in this show is quite riveting, and we learn in this case that even though the show is set in World War II at a time where it's known that there would have been Jews there, it's made clear that they've basically all been wiped out at this point by the 70s. But the issue was that a character who is shown as having positive qualities, being morally upstanding and brave and so on as a soldier, can't have a Jewish name, because showing something positive in a character who's Jewish is something that they simply can't have in a show like this.
Fascinating but grim stuff. And of course, Ingram is being pushed now from several sides. pushed by his son, pushed by this relationship he's having with the young actress Jill, pushed by his boss Harmer, and he's going to have to make a decision as to where he stands, as the stakes seem to be growing higher as the series progresses through the three episodes, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And we get this idea, will Ingram himself join the resistance? And, in what capacity? Or will he be what is referred to as a delator or an informer for the state and turn people in who are associated with the resistance? So it's something where the decisions are not easy ones, but they're ones between pretty radical alternatives in some cases.
Yes, and one of the sort of minor fascinating details of this show is that word delator, which I'd never heard before, Brian, and it gets explained to us in the show, as you say, an informer for the state, somebody who denounces somebody.
Yes, who reports someone and turns someone in for the state. So it's, sort of set up as this very specific thing.
And when his son Mark is arrested by the police and then subsequently released, one of Mark's questions is, who was the delator who informed on me? Who was it in the family who turned me in?
Yes, exactly. Now, the way that An Englishman's Castle portrays this world, this version of Great Britain that's ruled by Germany at a distance, is done in a pretty subtle way. We do not see Nazi uniforms. We don't see, flags and SS insignias. We don't see troops on the street. What we see is this much more subtle thing where things are okay if you're not the people who are being persecuted, and things are fine if you're not the person who's being pulled off the street and disappeared.
And I just find this absolutely intriguing. As you say, Brian, no uniforms. This is a show about men in suits or comfortable clothing, looking very British, having discussions. We hear in passing about the fact that it may basically be a puppet government that's controlled from Germany. We get little snippets about certain news items being removed or played down in case they reflect badly on Germany. I think Harmer is seen talking to his secretary on one of those very 70s intercom things and just in passing mentions, tell him that can't go in the news story, that has to be rewritten. And of course, we have the incredibly grim subject of concentration camps and the attempted elimination of all Jewish people, which is clearly implied by this show and is common knowledge amongst the lead characters. And it's just something that's happened. And as you say, Brian, Britain appears to be just getting on with things, going to restaurants, doing fairly well if you're in the middle classes and this stuff doesn't affect you. It's all done very subtly as we sort of realise through the mechanics of this series exactly what this is all built upon.
And this is where I feel I have to compare it to a show we covered some time ago called The Guardians, which was set in a sort of future dictatorship in Great Britain. And it did have the flags and insignias and soldiers marching on the street. So there is quite a contrast there. I think both approaches can be quite powerful, but it's quite a different portrayal. But what this has in common with The Guardians is those conversations between two people where you have quite riveting dialogue telling you what this world is like through these conversations.
It's very well done. I mean, we're tipping our hats slightly, but yes, this is a show about conversations in rooms, about dialogue rather than action. We'll come back to that in a moment, I guess, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. Ingram's TV show, this show within a show, An Englishman's Castle, has state propaganda sort of incorporated into it. It's presented as if it's not a propaganda piece, but it has a lot of that incorporated, and it very much has those rules imposed upon it. And it tells this story of the sensible British family during the war, agreeing and accepting that a surrender was certainly the right way to do things and the way to avoid all of the deaths that were happening and so on.
And there was a TV show over here called A Family at War, which was, you know, a very similar portrayal of a British family during wartime. And An Englishman's Castle is that sort of cozy family drama. But there are this, as you say, Brian, this sort of state propaganda inserted into it. And even when actors have been told to do lines slightly differently in rehearsal, it's because they want to give across this message about, you know, surrender was the sensible and calm thing to do.
Yes, and everything is shown as being very comfortable and middle class. It's sort of a very cozy depiction of these people who happen to be in the middle of a world war that's happening. But that is part of the hallmark of this show as a whole, is that you see there's a lot that looks very comfortable, and it's beneath the surface that you realize that things are very wrong indeed.
And even when the state police turn up, as you say, Brian, there's no uniforms, there's no jackboots, there's a very calm, polite man in a suit and an overcoat who's come to arrest Mark. And even some of the interrogations we see, it all begins very sort of calmly and politely. It's all very sort of British and reserved. And yet the implications of what's going on, we know what happens to some suspects once they're in police custody. We are given hints about torture and about people who die in custody.
Yeah, and it's fairly clear that that some people will, you know, will disappear.
And of course, there's the ongoing problem of what to do with the TV show and Ingram's sort of challenging debates and conversations with Harmer.
Yes, that's right. And we get this idea that the TV show is based on Ingram's own experience from when he was in the war, and he wants to incorporate elements of that into it, but there are very much these rules about what he's allowed to say and what he isn't. And this positive portrayal of a Jewish character was something that he was ultimately not allowed to do.
Fascinating stuff.
So we should talk about alternate histories of World War II in general. This is something that has been done a lot. The idea that what would the world look like if the war had ended differently? And it's sort of an ongoing fascination that's come up in film and TV and in novels and so on.
Yes, it does. It keeps recurring, and we're going to get to some examples of it. Possibly one of the earliest ones is a film that I keep hearing about, but I confess I've never actually seen it. A British feature film from 1964 called It Happened Here, which posits exactly that situation, that the Axis powers won World War II.
There was also, even a bit earlier, Philip K. Dick's novel, The Man in the High Castle, which also was dealing with the same idea. That was from 1962. And there is now an Amazon TV series based on that book.
And talking about books that have been turned into TV series, Len Deighton's novel, SSGB, was published only a few months after An Englishman's Castle aired, and has then gone on to become a TV series in 2017 for British TV. So yes, SSGB, it's another one.
And then there was Robert Harris. He had the novel Fatherland from 1992, which was also quite well known.
I mean, it's such a recurring and fascinating idea for writers that, in fact, there's a whole Wikipedia page devoted to all the various books, comics, TV and films that are based on this idea. I have to say, I think some of them haven't, some of the titles they list, not entirely correct, but there's certainly the long list on there.
Yes, you get into things, there's the comment about Star Trek, The City on the Edge of Forever from the 1960s, which refers to the idea about a timeline where the war goes the other way and Germany wins. But it's not something that we focus on or that we see in the TV episode. So it's something that the idea is used in a lot of things to the point where it becomes a side story in things.
So I've watched that episode recently, and of course it's actually set before the war in the early 30s during the Great Depression, and it sort of implies the changes in time that I think Dr. McCoy might provoke would lead to Germany winning the war. But we don't actually see the consequences of it. It's just discussed because, of course, Kirk and Spock are on hand to try and put things right.
That's right. That's the one.
And I am, you know, I'm the Joan Collins fan club, so I should mention that she is in that episode famously.
Of course. There are also, of course, a lot of things that cover authoritarian police states in Great Britain or in the US. Doctor Who did an alternate universe thing with that in Inferno in 1970. We have covered a couple of shows. I already mentioned The Guardians, which had fascist Great Britain in the present day, and we covered that in British Invaders 182 and 183. And then there was also 1990, which had a British authoritarian state, but more a communist one in that case. That was British Invaders 287 and 288. And they had an interesting contrast between them that we talked about in 287 and 288 as well.
As we say, The Guardians had the very much those sort of dialogues between characters. 1990 had it as well. But in The Guardians, as you say, we had the uniforms, we had the marching troops, the flags and everything. So am I right? The Guardians had a version of the first Doctor in a debate with the actor who played the White Guardian, Brian. Is that right?
That was right. It was Cyril Luckham, who was the White Guardian in Doctor Who, playing the Prime Minister, sort of puppet Prime Minister, in a discussion with Richard Herndl, who played the first Doctor in The Five Doctors after William Hartnell had passed away by that point. And in The Guardians, Richard Herndl was playing the head of, they called it the EBC, so it was that show's version of the BBC. And they had nearly a whole episode spent on a dialogue between those two about censorship. So again, very interesting things going on in the dialogue. And I was reminded of that in An Englishman's Castle, which also does a lot of very powerful things and gives the feel of showing us things rather than telling us things, though it's through these dialogues between pairs of characters.
So it's fascinating stuff, these alternate histories and what they tell us about ourselves and about our own societies. As we've said, it seems to be endlessly fascinating, and I put out a shout out on the Facebook group. If anybody knows any other good examples, please point me at them.
So I think it's time we get into our own thoughts and feelings about this and a little more about what we thought. So, Eamon, what did you like about An Englishman's Castle?
So I think our listeners will have gathered by now that we're impressed by this show, Brian. I'm going to start with the writing, which I think is subtle and incredibly powerful. I'm particularly taken with the way this series shows and does not tell, as you say, Brian. There's no introduction, there's no narration or voiceover to bring us up to speed. We don't see the uniforms, the flags, the insignia. It's all told to us through dialogue, almost by chance remarks. And I was tremendously impressed by Philip Mackie's work on this series. It was quite stunning. I don't know what you would say about the writing, Brian.
I would agree that the writing is very good. It is quite lean in the sense that there is no padding in here. We have three 50-minute episodes, and everything in there, just about every line, is doing something important. And it does a beautiful job of painting that world. So I'll agree on the writing. I will also specifically say the dialogue in here, both in terms of writing and performance. The dialogue is stunning. It's really good.
Yes, as we've hinted as we've gone along, there's really very little action in this show. There are a couple of explosions, sort of special effects. But apart from that, this is a show about people meeting and talking. We see, I think, the consequences of a police interrogation when Mark Ingram is released by the police, because basically because his father has got some power and clout and was able to get Harmer to get him out. But apart from that, this is a show when everything is delivered to us pretty much in dialogue and very cleverly done.
Yeah, we see a lot of dialogue conversations. We see rehearsals for the television show and clips of what the television show itself looks like. We see all of those things, but the actual things of sort of more action kinds of things, or the police taking people away, all of that happens quite briefly. We're spending our time in the way these people interact with each other, and it's really about that dialogue. And that's something that I thought worked tremendously well in this.
It does indeed. What else did you like about the show in terms of its production and so on, Brian?
Well, the performances were also very good. I thought Kenneth Moore did a wonderful job of struggling as Peter Ingram to do the things that were going to cost him a lot, and to realize that, yes, this is really a situation, a society where you can't trust what you see on the surface, that there is so much going on that is so horrible below the surface. Also, Isla Blair as Jill shows us a lot in her performance, and we realize how much more she is than what she first appears. So there's a lot going on in the performances that were really very good.
Indeed, yes, they are very good. I will particularly mention, in a way, the sort of brilliance of casting Kenneth Moore, who was the epitome of British sort of pluck and good nature and courage and so on. And to have him in this position where he's wrestling with his own conscience in this program, and he's going to be faced with a big decision to make, I thought he did it very well. I thought he showed the character thinking and worrying and debating internally as well as in offices. But I'd also mention Anthony Bates as Harmo, who I thought was superb. So polite and charming, but also so chilling and dominant, and, you know, clearly pushing the party line and being firm on the matter of certain, you know, the names that they would use in the show and certain news items and so on. Clearly controlling things, and quite a great performance, I thought.
Yes, he was very good indeed, as was Nigel Havers as Mark Ingram, the younger son, who, you know, has to play this sort of angry character with some honesty and depth, with more than just the anger, and that was very good as well.
And I quite like the way that the family in An Englishman's Castle, the show within a show, have two sons, one of whom who is away in the army fighting, and the other one who's staying at home, but who may be part of the resistance. And of course, we know Ingram's character based, you know, this story on his own life. So I wondered if he was the soldier who was away but didn't want to be, and who felt that Britain should surrender, and whether he sees in his own two sons those sort of like opposites, the one that is angry and wants to resist, and the other one that just wants to climb the corporate ladder and become a director at the British Broadcasting Network. I thought that was very interesting within the show, the way they did that. They mirrored Ingram's own experiences as a young man with his own family.
Yeah, he makes the comment about both of the sons being different aspects of him. And you can see that in his current situation, he's still struggling with that idea, and some of the elements that he showed as sort of disappearing from his character are still there, and he's sort of struggling with this. So you get that there as well.
Of course, this show, as we've said, is very clever in the way it portrays what a late 1970s Britain would be like under German rule. And what impressed me about it so much, Brian, was that they didn't go for the flags and jackboots. Instead, they showed a Britain which, if you've got a certain amount of money and a certain amount of status, everything looks great. they're having a fine time. They're going out to posh restaurants. They are always having a drink in the office because this was the 70s, and on television, whenever anybody walked into an office, they would get a glass of whiskey, it seemed. But they're all very comfortable and well off. This is a Britain that seems to be doing quite well under German rule, which is, you know, is a strange concept for us when we think about the outcome of World War II.
It's very much the iron fist in the velvet glove. They give us something where, yeah, things look pretty good on the surface, but there is, you know, so much that that is going on below the surface. You had mentioned the phrase, the banality of evil, which I think is also something that is very apt here, in that we see things going along in a very comfortable, normal kind of way, and yet there is evil there.
And I also, I mean, I think that's very appropriate and apposite. And I also think about the title of this show, An Englishman's Castle. You know, the phrase is, an Englishman's home is his castle. And of course, castles have foundations, have to be built on something. And the chilling reality that this show portrays to us is that the foundations that this comfortable lifestyle are built on are terrible. It's, you know, as you say, it's the awful truth of what's happened. And as you say, as you very well put, Brian, you know, that iron fist concealed within a velvet glove that's gently ruling things, but is very firm about certain points. So I thought it was brilliantly done. I thought it was very impressive the way this series just delivered that to us. Because your first glance might think, well, everything seems all right. They look all they seem to be doing okay, and yet the truth of it is so so appalling in a way.
Yes, and that is very much the strength of this show, is that that's what it's doing, and also how it's doing that, because it shows us those things in quite a powerful way.
So was there anything that you sort of picked this production up for being not quite so good, Brian? Any problems you had with it?
There is very little. It is a show that has 1970s pacing, so if you're looking for something that looks like very modern television, it's not like that. It is 1970s television. I think it is probably best watched as three episodes watched separately rather than in a row. I like to watch something like this on maybe three consecutive days. But if you do that and you are okay with sort of 1970s television approaches, there's very little I would have to point out that's a problem with this. I think it's a very solid show.
Yes, it is.
It is difficult subject matter. So that is sort of, I guess, a warning to go with it, is it is difficult subject matter, and if that's something to be aware of.
Yes, it is. It deals with some very difficult subjects, not least of which is the idea, you know, which is sort of like quite difficult for Britain with its creation myth from World War II. But it's quite difficult for Britain to accept that actually they might have just sort of like gone along with things and just had, you know, a reasonably comfortable lifestyle. So that's difficult. And of course, as we say, the implications of what that's built on is chilling. The 70s stuff, yeah, there is a bit of 70s stuff. There's a slightly brown look to it in terms of, you know, the clothing and the backdrops. We've mentioned many a time that smoking and drinking and seem to be quite prevalent in those shows. And every office seems to have a drinks tray in the corner, it would seem, Brian, in those times.
Yes, I actually kind of like the 1970s look to it, because it feels so normal. If you've seen television from that era at all, it really seems so normal, which is, you know, an important part of this.
Okay. I mean, as we've pointed out, this is a show of talking. There is not much action. It's a show of talking. The 70s, we've covered a few of these shows, Brian. We've mentioned, obviously, The Guardians in 1990, where they like to do this. They like to have dialogue explain things to us. So it just depends what our listeners feel about that, whether they can cope with a lot of men in offices discussing stuff. So that's a potential downside, but I actually found it quite fascinating.
Yes, and I think the fact that it's only three episodes sort of offsets that somewhat, because you're getting a lot in a relatively small span of time.
Yeah, it's not a big commitment, as you say, three episodes, and it does fill the time. It uses all the time. There's a lot of information being passed on to us in dialogue. So, Brian, anything else to say about the show and its production before we get to our recommendations?
I think we should move on to our recommendations.
Do you want to start on this one, Brian?
I can start on this one. I will give this a strong recommendation. It is a wonderful piece of drama. It deals with difficult subject matter, for sure. And as we said, does it with a lot of dialogue. But the dialogue is superb. It is a well-written and well-performed show. It's really very good, so I would strongly recommend this. If you can get a hold of An Englishman's Castle and take a look, please do.
Splendid. I'm going to join you in a very strong recommendation on this show. I was quite astounded by it and quite perplexed as to why I'd never heard of it before, because, as I say, for some reason this one completely passed me by, which is why I'd be so interested to see what the Radio Times preview said about it. But this is a show that has quite fascinating and chilling ideas delivered to us in what seems initially to be quite cozy format. I was blown away by this show, Brian. It's one of the highlights of this year. And in fact, it's one of those, it joins that list of previously undiscovered gems, like from the 50s, Nigel Neal's 1984, from the 60s, Undermined, and now from the 70s, An Englishman's Castle. So it's on that list for me of shows that are, I wasn't previously aware of and now sort of really quite taken with.
Those are all really interesting shows with a lot to say, for sure.
Absolutely. So I'm now looking for my gem from the 80s to add to my list, but we'll perhaps come back to that another time. But yeah, it's two strong recommendations for An Englishman's Castle here on British Invaders. But as ever, if you disagree with our takes, if you'd like to tell us your own experience of watching this show, then please get in touch on the Gmail or by searching for and joining the Facebook group.
Absolutely. So, in summary, An Englishman's Castle introduced us to an alternate history version of the then present day late 1970s, with a television writer called Peter Ingram, who was responsible for writing a show called An Englishman's Castle. So we have a show within a show, and we learn quite soon that in this version of history, the Germans, the Nazis, won World War II, and the British puppet government now rules Great Britain for Germany. And we see this very comfortable type of world where people seem to be living quite well. And we learn more and more that things are very wrong indeed, and that the Jews have been basically wiped out, and that there is a great deal of censorship, and there are people being pulled off the street for being dissidents and disappeared, and a great deal of things that we gradually learn through dialogue mostly is very wrong, and there is a great deal of evil that is hidden behind this nice exterior.
Oh, it's fascinating. Check it out and let us know what you think.
Please do.
And please do come back next time when we are doing a show which was a listener suggestion for us, a TV play from Channel 4 in 2002 called Solid Geometry, which has got some very interesting people involved in the production. And I'll hint at a Doctor, a Jedi, and an X-Wing pilot in the mix there for us next time, Brian.
That is a rare combination, and it'll be a fun one to talk about for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, well over 300 of them. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group, where we always have some good discussions going on. And you also get to hear about our next few show topics in advance.
Yes, check it out. And of course, please remember to check us out on the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com, for the Voice of Geeks, where British Invaders is a proud member.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.